With the coronavirus pandemic in full swing, the world has gone topsy-turvy. What was once on the bottom is now on top. Conservatives who used to try to shame LGBTQ folks into abstinence during the AIDS crisis are now the ones transgressing public health concerns and congregating for bareback, barrier-free church services and protests.
Meanwhile, disgraced former Republican Congressman Aaron Schock is self-isolating in Mexico with no less than six of his most Instagrammable muscular friends, thereby feeding the social media rage machine.
Sure, you could be mad about it, but what can you really do about rich gays eating mangoes in Tijuana?
Today, therapist and relationship expert Damon L. Jacobs joins us to take a look at peace, purpose, and pleasure during the age of the coronavirus pandemic, with safer sex options, calming techniques, and how to get ready for the political fight of your life.
Plus, beauty experts say, please leave your hair alone.
Did sex toys help Denmark flatten the curve?
And what's up with Cher these days? Oh, I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
And this is Feast of Fun.
And it's also Fausto's birthday!
Yay!
Feast of Fun is made possible because of fabulous people just like you. Support the podcast and enjoy an ad-free experience at feastoffun.com/plus.
Hello, Feast of Fun.
Hi, Damon L. Jacobs. It's Fausto.
And Mark, how are you?
Hello. It's so good to hear your voices, especially now more than ever. I'm so grateful to hear you and hear you on the show.
Thank you. Likewise.
Hey, how are you surviving the Rona?
Well, you know, this is a ride unlike any other I've ever been on. I live in Brooklyn and my office is in New York City. So I've definitely been, we are the epicenter here. And it's a challenge for me and for everybody I know right now.
Well, I wanted to talk to you today on my birthday of all days.
Happy birthday, Fausto.
Doesn't feel like my birthday, but I do have lots of love and lots of baked goods.
We could sing happy birthday to you. Would you like that?
No.
You sure?
We don't have the copyright
happy
for that.
Happy birthday to you.
You have to. No. Zip. Hey. Yeah. Every time you sing happy birthday, Michael Jackson's estate gets a check.
Did he ever really own
it? I don't know. I don't think
that was the rumor, but they say he never really did.
I don't know.
So I guess Thriller is out of the question then.
Come on. Okay. So anyways, you made a big commotion many years back, the early days of PrEP, the little magic blue pill that keeps the HIV at bay, 99.99% effective, by declaring yourself a Truvada whore. You even sold merchandise.
Well, to be clear, I wouldn't say I invented the term. I embraced the term. It was a term that was used against me after I started speaking openly in 2012 about my decision to use PrEP in order to have condomless sex as a bottom and still remain HIV negative. And from that conversation came the accusations, the slut shaming, the names, and the one that really went viral, so to speak, is the Truvada whore label. And there was a whole article that went in that in Huffington Post. And I decided, okay, if this is what people are going to say about me, if this is what people are going to think about anybody who's going to step up and take responsibility for their sexual health, then I'm going to embrace it. I'm going to like own it. I was very much tapping into my inner Cher, as you know, as well as influences of Madonna from out my entire life. And just saying if I'm going to piss people off, I might as well just really own it and love that.
It's kind of the same mindset of why Cher wore that black feathered Bob Mackie gown at the Oscars.
Absolutely. I grew up with that influence. I grew up watching Cher. I grew up watching Madonna and seeing how they navigated aggressive, sex negative hate that was pushed against them and how they really embraced it and made it part of their brand. And I thought, well, if they can do that, I can do that too. So that's what I did with Truvada whore. If that's what they're going to call me anyway, I'm going to own it and love it.
And that's part of the reason I wanted to get you on the show, because I've been seeing on social media, which is pretty much the only media these days, where we're interacting with each other on this digital space, and people are shaming each other for whether they're socializing too little or too much. And, you know, right now we all have this kind of civic duty to self-isolate to mitigate this pandemic.
It's an example of something, and I'm glad you brought up PrEP because I think that gives us context. And there's always a sense of blaming other people for what makes you uncomfortable or blaming other people when you feel afraid or scared or confused, to point to a scapegoat and say, he or she is the reason I'm uncomfortable right now. And COVID has kind of taken that normal reality for us and really revved it up to the 11 on the volume switch. Because it's like now people go outside to talk about how wrong other people are to go outside.
But it is against the law in some places to congregate outside.
Well, I'd say people have to know what their local guidelines are telling them. But in New York City, we're not being told not to go outside. We're being told if you go outside, make sure you wash your hands and you stay 6 feet apart from other people and you take reasonable precautions and wear a mask and all that stuff. But we're not being told not to go outside, not to exercise. We just can't gather.
Okay. Well, it's kind of like what we have, like a stay at home order here, too. It's like, but it's like don't congregate out in places in public, that kind of thing, too. They want you to stay at home.
But I've seen people like walking around a supermarket with their cell phones in their ear and they're like spitting and talking and, you know, it's almost like if you're not wearing a mask, it's almost a social taboo. And I wanted to get you on the show because I'm concerned that in some ways we're losing this battle that we've fought so hard for peace, purpose, and pleasure, for being able to be comfortable with our own bodies. And I'm worried that once this pandemic ends, that we're all going to be very taboo about our bodies because of the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, I think fear and not having facts, not having reliable medical facts, just really revs up everyone's uncertainty and discomfort. And I think as gay men who survived the AIDS crisis, the first thing we go to is when we're afraid and when we're uncertain is that, you know, other people's bodies are vectors of disease and death. And a lot of us were conditioned to believe that.
Well, right now, everybody's like, see, it is true. And instead of reducing that shame, we're expanding it to the general population. So everybody is a vector of disease now.
Which is not a great public health strategy. And we know this historically, mm-hmm. that shaming people and shooting people is not an effective public health strategy.
But why is it that?
Because you're taking away people's sense of agency. You're taking away people's sense of control. You can use, maybe for a short period of time, you can get people to comply with what you're asking them or telling them to do or what they should do. But that's very, very minimal. And we're already seeing that in New York City, where now that we've kind of maybe sort of kind of flattened the curve, or maybe we're sort of getting over the apex, already people are like hitting the streets and trying to get out of the house. Because the inspiration for staying in the house has not been for many people coming from a place of internal motivation. It's all been coming a place of fear and should.
Sure. But Damon, a lot of the people who are wanting to be out of the house and congregate and be out loud and proud are conservatives, are Christian fundamentalists, going to church, having picnics,
protests, rallies at state capitals.
The very same people that were shaming us in the past for being sexually active are now the ones who are like flipping that script and being like, God's going to protect me.
Right. I mean, of course, you're articulating sort of the lack of logic and science behind a lot of rituals in certain religious communities. And it's not just one. There's a lot of religious communities that are sort of flaunting and disregarding science and medicine. But then why do we come back to the gays? And when I say this, I mean mean gays, gay on gay shaming that I see, then you have seen as well, so prevalent right now in this community where people seem to be really laser focused on shaming other gay people for going outside or for exercising or for even considering what it would be like to have sex right now in the middle of a pandemic.
Mm. Well, I imagine that everybody's really horny right now.
Oh, yeah.
I don't people want are,
and it's not just horny. It's a lot of people, Fausto, are lonely. Mm-hmm. And I don't think we want to minimize that or undermine that, because loneliness is a very, very powerful experience. We already have an epidemic of loneliness. You've talked about this on the show before. Mm. We already have that in this country. But now you have so many people and so many gay men who are isolated and literally not with other people who love them, whether it's a partner or a husband or their created family, and they're really struggling with this new realm. It's traumatizing.
Yeah, I'm seeing like the epicenter of this once again is Aaron L. Schock.
The gay shaming.
This past week, people found photos of him on vacation in Mexico with six of his most muscular friends, not doing any social distancing, if you know what I mean, posting lots of photos of them arm in arm with the sun going down in the background, with lavish breakfasts, sliced up mangoes.
Well, we also don't know what's happening in Mexico and what, you know, because they're there, right?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, like, are they, like, the whole world is not on lockdown.
Sure, sure. But it is, you know, getting a lot of people rightfully upset that he's like kind of,
and people love to hate deaf. Him.
And they love to hate him. He came out as gay, and then the coronavirus pandemic came, so it was kind of a good timing for him. Yeah, and so he's like, I don't want the Rona to steal my thunder. I'm kind of beginning to wonder if Aaron Schock sexually gets turned on by being hated on. Because I know Justin Jedlicka said this, the human Ken doll said this on the show, that he really enjoys people kind of humiliating him. And part of his attraction to being the human Ken doll is that he can go to a beach and there will always be a group of people, especially gay men, going, ugh, he disgusts me. And then he goes home and he pleasures himself thinking about it.
Well, okay, that's all well and good, but here's the problem. Again, if we're talking about peace, purpose, and pleasure in a pandemic, is that shaming other people is not going to change the way you feel about yourself. And it's certainly not going to change the fear and the trauma and the loneliness that you're experiencing at that moment. It is not an effective way to really cope well with a health crisis and with mental health issues.
Well, listen, right now we're having a lot of mental health issues.
Yes, and I don't think shaming and blaming and scapegoating other people help us to deal with that in an effective way, not in my experience.
So what's the safest way to hook up with a stranger during a pandemic? Let's just get right to the meat.
Let's get to the pleasure. Like, forget
let's
the
get
other
to the meat.
Stuff.
Like, how do you make that decision? Because I've been in lockdown for a month now. I haven't really, like, done anything since, like, March 17th or 18th.
Right. So this is where, if you have a background in harm reduction, it's really, really helpful.
So tell people a little bit about what harm reduction is, because we might have some new listeners that aren't really familiar with the idea.
Yeah.
Because there's people right now, like, the steam's coming out of their ears right now, just even the thought of hooking up with somebody. It's just like going to get them angry. So,
well, of course, and getting angry at us for talking about this isn't going to change what they're angry about.
Yeah.
They're just going to scapegoat us and probably call us Travada whores or whatever horrible name they're going to use for us tomorrow.
Well, I'm still on the fence about it, just for the record.
Oh, I mean, believe me, I have not hooked up with anybody in a while.
Like, you keep your distance.
But harm reduction, harm reduction traditionally is a model of approaching wellness and care, mental health wellness, and it really comes from a substance abuse framework where it's saying, okay, if you are not able or interested in abstinence, and if you are potentially going to do things that may hurt yourself and could potentially hurt others, can we talk about that together in a way that reduces the potential for you to hurt yourself and to hurt other people? And if you're going to use needles, if you're going to shoot up, if you're going to use crystal meth, this is the framework by which harm reduction became known throughout the 70s and 80s, because it's different from the abstinence model, and it has incurred a lot of wrath and anger for that. But for those of us that are actually working in the community and really, really interested and engaged in helping people have a healthier and happier and longer lives, harm reduction is a really necessary component of meeting people where they're at and then helping them make healthier decisions. And so when it comes to sex during COVID, that model has truly worked, I think really applies very well to what we're facing right now. Because the only thing that's safe right now is complete abstinence, like 6 feet apart from every other human being on the face of the earth. That's really the only thing that's quote, safe to do.
But it would be like, you know, Faust and I can hook up because we live together. And if, you know,
he's my buddy.
We're already sharing the same space. But
if one or either one of you has gone outside and been less than 6 feet from any other human being, according to the, you know, according to what we're hearing from others, that puts one of you at risk. And then the other one could be at risk. And the virus doesn't care if you know each other, if you're married or not.
But I think, you know, there's a big difference between making out with somebody and waiting 6 feet apart in line in the Chipotle burrito line.
So is
that
like,
forms outside.
So like harm reduction. So like, is a glory hole like a good option?
Well, glory holes would actually be a great option for harm reduction, as far as I understand, and this is based on my understanding of the way COVID works, because the main way COVID is transmitted is through saliva, or rather the droplet.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So COVID, you have to get the droplets usually inside your nose or your mouth. But as far as we know, COVID doesn't exist in semen or precum.
Okay. So like the urethra and all that kind of stuff, so like that's not going to affect it?
If you're touching your face and you're touching your mouth, then you're touching your dick. There
but
it goes.
But you're
the
sucking
window.
Somebody else's dick, or yeah. you're on the receiving end. So let's talk about you're on the receiving end. So you're at a glory hole. Your dick is out. Somebody's sucking your dick. But they might have COVID. But there's at least maybe a little barrier from. I don't know.
This just seems kind of like we just don't know enough information.
Well, we're hazarding right now. We're just guessing. And yes. We're talking about it. We don't have like these are the answers to these kind of things.
But is it okay just to ask people? Can you just put it on pause for a couple of weeks?
We're not there yet. We're
until
talking about
we
harm
figure
reduction.
Out what to do.
Well, that would be an abstinence model, Fausto, and maybe that works for some people, but I can tell you that doesn't work for everybody.
That's why I think this is very complex, much more complex than anything we've ever faced as gay men, as human beings, probably in the history of the world, because in some ways, you know, abstinence is what everybody is doing right now.
Not everyone's doing abstinence.
Except the very people that were pro-abstinence in the past are the ones who are most flippant about violating that stay-at-home request or order.
Okay. Well, I can tell you that abstinence is not something that everybody is doing right now in the age of COVID.
Yes.
But the people I know that are not abstinent are being very mindful and as informed and practicing as much harm reduction as they can. Given the situation. And what that means is that they're practicing, especially before and after being connected with someone, the hand washing thing, that whole 20 seconds, Gloria Gaynor, I will survive thing. And it's talking to your partner and communicating with them perhaps more than you normally would. Maybe even taking their temperature and taking your temperature. Finding out,
have you had any
of these symptoms in the last 2 weeks? What? What's that?
I said, oh, honey, I'm always hot.
It's running hot.
Yeah. But, you know, there's a difference between being hot-blooded,
so
let's
present
actually
this.
Having a temperature.
So
a
somebody's coming over to your house, and you stick a thermometer in their mouth or in their or rectally. Well, now you don't want to do rectally because, like, I guess COVID hangs out in the like you can't eat somebody's ass, right?
That's what Lady Bunny said, but I don't.
I think
it
was an article that they said that like
she said that if you eat ass, the Rona loves to live in fecal matters.
I've been told it is in fecal matters. Yeah. So rimming would be a higher risk activity.
They actually examine sewage feces all the time just to like see, hey, what's up with people? And they have found a lot of COVID in feces. But like, you know, so
kissing is risky for COVID.
Right.
I mean, that's really risky because you're really dealing directly from saliva to saliva, from droplets to droplets.
So possibly like a safer scenario would be you take the temperature, you wear a mask.
Oh my God.
Right?
Mask for mask.
Again, that would be a harm reduction.
You know,
you use
a condom.
You could, but it's when we're talking about COVID, we're really not talking about semen or, okay. or penises. We're not, that's so, really not
so
where
that
it lives.
Mucus membrane that's like around the tip of your urethra, it's not going to get in through there?
As far as I'm aware, okay. that hasn't been really been seen to be the big risk here. It's really about kissing and okay. saliva and breathing on each other.
So all those total straight tops are not going to get it at all. They're going to be like, I don't kiss.
Yeah. And so, you know, the people I know that are doing this are also being more, instead of just meeting people they've never met before, mm-hmm. who might have just come from like, you know, a meth party or something, they're talking to partners who they've known, people they've known in the past, or people who they think, if this person tells me that over the last 3 or 4 weeks, they've had zero symptoms of COVID, and they're taking their temperature every day, and they've had no exposure to COVID, that it's likely that this person is not only A, telling the truth, but B, really knows their own situation. And so there is some discernment in all this. There is some ways that people can navigate and reduce risk, not eliminate risk, but mm-hmm. reduce risk. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, it's still a wild card, because even if someone's honestly telling you, hey, I have been alone for 4 weeks, I have had no symptoms of COVID, I have had no exposure to anybody who has had symptoms of COVID, that person still may not know and could still be putting you at risk. So there is some risk here, but harm reduction is not about harm elimination. It's harm reduction. Mm.
And like just hearing this conversation right now, and I'm thinking about what the audience is reacting to or thinking about, and they're like, mm-hmm. this feast of fun is a bonkers. And part of
well,
it
you're
is
shaming us now.
I'm not shaming you.
I'm not saying you should go out and do this. I'm just asking questions. I'm curious, like, as far as harm reduction goes, like, what's that scenario kind of look at? A couple weeks ago on the show, I used to kind of said, like, you know, if you're alone for a month and somebody else has been alone for a month and they haven't really gotten out and that you've hooked up with them in the past, why not? You know? Or if you did, you know, I mean, of course, there's going to be some risk there, but like, what is the risk? And especially like if you're in a place that really hasn't really had like an outbreak of COVID, you know, New York City, I would be, of course, be, you know, a little extra more careful than I would be if I was like in, you know, Idaho or something.
Right. And the other thing that's essential to harm reduction is cost benefit. Mm. And in other words, let's just say the worst case scenario happens and I hook up with somebody or I even kiss somebody, because that's what we're really talking about, is the danger. And I end up acquiring COVID. So what are the consequences? Well, right now, for me personally, I live alone and I have no contact with pretty much any other human beings. And I'm not really seeing anybody who's at great statistical risk of dying from COVID.
Yeah.
So that may not be. But if I lived with an older adult, or I had a mother or a grandmother, or I was a caretaker for someone who was vulnerable to dying from COVID statistically, mm-hmm. then the risks might be a lot higher, and the consequences might be a lot greater than someone who lives alone. Mm-hmm. And I'm asking everybody who's considering this is just to be aware of that as well.
Yeah.
The other person who I think spoke really, really well to this is Deborah Birx. And I know she's a controversial figure in the community right now.
Explain to the listeners out in the world who Deborah Birx is and why she's controversial.
So Deborah Birx has a really long history of being an ally to the LGBT community, and she is an American physician. She's a diplomat who specializes in HIV/AIDS vaccine research, global health, and she has a really strong track record of working very well with the community in a very humane way. But recently, she has been part of Trump's coronavirus response team. She's been a medical coordinator. And in that time, she has been giving press conferences and interviews where she's being very methodical and scientific, but then she's also kind of praising the current president. And she's getting a lot of pushback for that.
But she's also a medical professional, and she understands that, like, you know, we talked before with you about this, that the president displays a lot of narcissistic tendencies, right?
She's playing the game.
So she understands that he needs this praise in order for her to save lives, I would imagine, right?
She is playing the game.
Because
she knows how to play the game.
She really believes that he's a decent human being.
Right. I think she knows what the score is, and she knows how to play the game, and she knows that she's going to save so many more lives by praising him right now mm-hmm. than by being fired by him. Mm-hmm. and being replaced by someone who doesn't know what they're doing and doesn't care about medicine and science. And that's the risk that she and Dr. Fauci are facing every single day.
But so I do what was her say, point? What was her, the
her thing point was that on March 26th, during a press interview, she said, look, I just want to share with you a story. My grandmother was 11 years old when she contracted the Spanish flu just by going to school, and she brought it home without knowing it. And ultimately, that flu killed her mother, who had recently given birth and had gotten quite sick. So for the rest of her life, she lived with the burden of believing that she had contributed actively to her own mother's death. And she had to live with that. And she lived with the guilt of that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I thought that was a very, very powerful message. And I'm just asking people not to be fearful, but just saying if the consequences right now of having sex and COVID means that you might accidentally and inadvertently expose someone who's going to die, is that something you can live with? Is that the burden you want to carry for the rest of your life?
My mother really wanted me to come home for her birthday, her 95th birthday.
Yeah.
You know, because she's like, this might be my last birthday. I'm like, well, I live in a city. I've been around people. It's just like, I don't know if I have it. I don't know if I don't have it. And if I came home and I gave it to you and you died, I mean, I wouldn't want to, like, I'd have to carry that with me for the rest of my life.
Whereas my mom is like, oh, I don't mind dying.
I'm ready.
I love your mom.
Mom. The other thing too is like, you know, being in New York City is you definitely don't want to get it. Cause like, what if you get sick and you have to go to that Franklin Graham Tent Christian Hospital, you know, it's just like, I wouldn't want to be there.
I wouldn't either, but Mark, you really articulate beautifully that is exactly what I'm asking everyone to
That's
do
the
is
consequence.
Just to weigh that out, the cost, you know? And the benefit of it possibly exposing yourself and then possibly exposing someone you love to this killer virus that we don't fully understand yet. We will understand it, yeah, at some point, but we don't understand it now. That's what I'm asking people to do.
And not just that it's a killer, it's just, it's super, even if you survive it, for a lot of people, it's super painful.
It's excruciating.
Like a motherfucker.
You're drowning on the
You're
inside.
Drowning. Your head's hurting. You're just like, ugh.
But so, it strikes me hearing people talking about President Trump, who gave himself and his friends more bailout money in the billions than they gave to hospitals or medical responses that are struggling and fighting this pandemic.
Yep.
And it just strikes me that right now we're sort of caught in a dysfunctional relationship. Republicans saw what was coming and they welcomed it because they knew that it would give them the opportunity to destroy democracy. They're trying to get rid of the U.S. postal system, and that's going to be the only way we can vote.
And that bailout, safely. Not only like in cash in on all this bailout money because they knew they would get it, but also too to hide all their other shenanigans, whatever else they might be up to, because like everything else is like in chaos.
And to me, it's very unnerving. It's distressful to not hear anybody talking about the U.S. Postal Service. It might not be around when we need to vote in November.
Well, I think it's kind of. They can't get rid of it because it's in the Constitution. So it's going to be a real, like, it's just.
But they're crippling it.
They're trying to cripple it. Yes, exactly. But they can't, you know what I mean? They can't do it because it's like.
They would like nothing better than to liquidate the U.S. Postal Service.
They've been trying
service.
To do that for 40 years. They've not been successful.
And so, part of it.
So back to harm reduction. What other ways can I get sexy with, you know, like. Let's waste. What are some other scenarios?
How can
scenarios?
We bring sexy back during the Rona?
What are some other scenarios?
Well, so again, Mark, so I want to come back to what you said.
Circle
is weighing the cost benefit that if sexuality right now or human contact could result in hurting your mother, that's the last thing you want to do. That's the last thing you want to live with. So for today, that might be really important that you decide today, I'm not going to be sexually active, or I'm not going to go meet somebody or kiss somebody. And that is why it's so important to have friends or therapists or people in our lives we can share these feelings with openly, without shame, without should, without being told you're being a dirty whore or you're being a slut or you're promiscuous. Because those words shut people down from having the kind of conversations that we need to be able to have, especially now more than ever. and other ways to connect. Hey, we're in the digital age. There's FaceTime. There's ways that people can be connected and naked and have sex together through the computer screen. You know, I mean, it's futuristic, but here we are. All the Pornhub stuff is free. We have Netflix. There's a lot of sexy stuff on Netflix.
What are you jerking to on Netflix? Come on.
I got to say, so
Tiger King's getting you aroused, huh?
Oh, the Tiger King. Wow. You know, one of those, actually. There was that meme that would like compared Adam Levine to one of the Tiger King husbands, and I gotta say, for me, the Tiger King husband would win out before Adam Levine.
He had too many
that's
teeth.
Just my taste.
I got it. You know what? It's like he has new teeth now, but part of me is just like he looked cuter before if he didn't smile. I don't know. He's changed a little bit. Yeah. You know, yeah. It's weird.
But and it's also knowing that we will, I don't know when, but we will get back to a point in our day-to-day lives when we can approach intimacy, connection, and sexuality from a celebratory and healthy place again. We're not living out the rest of our lives in this place. We're talking about potentially another year or so before we have a vaccine. And by the way, if you do clear coronavirus and you have the antibodies, it's believed medically that you will have some protection from this thing. So that's another thing to that we don't know how many of us have actually had it and cleared it. And we don't know that because we don't have testing for that.
Now, since you run the PrEP group on Facebook and you're a PrEP advocate, there's been some talk that PrEP may offer some kind of protection against coronavirus as an antiviral, because it is an antiviral. Mm-hmm. But there's not really been any real studies yet, or we just don't know. It's inconclusive. Mm-hmm.
Well, there's two trials that are actively looking at this right now. One is taking place in China, and it's looking at Descovy, one of the drugs approved for PrEP, Descovy in combination with Keytruda. So they're both antiretrovirals, and that's being studied. And then the other one was just announced last week, and it's being done in Madrid. And it's taking a look at how Truvada may protect people from COVID in combination with the thing that Trump keeps talking about, the one I can't pronounce, the anti-malaria drug.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Hydroclox. I'm so sorry. I can't remember the name of it.
That's okay.
So it's looking at these antiretrovirals in combination with other drugs to see would they be effective in treating and or preventing COVID. And the truth is we just don't know. They just kicked off these trials, and trials take a while.
Years,
so it's interesting they're being studied, but you know, I'm also really always more on the side of science and like, you know, I've been part of vaccine research for so many years, and every time it's like, yay, there's going to be a vaccine. And then 4 years later, the trial ends and it's like, oh, that didn't do anything.
So you take two Truvadas before you hook up with somebody. Is that?
Well, if you're preventing.
Disclaimer here, this show's for entertainment purposes only.
If you're going to prevent HIV, there's many, many ways to do that. If you're preventing COVID, we don't believe that PrEP, we don't know, we don't have no reason to believe today that PrEP would offer any protection from COVID.
All right.
Damon, you are one of the few people I know who years ago, when it was risky or dangerous or there was a high level of risk, you put your body up for medical science to test HIV vaccines.
Yes. Yes, I was injected with an experimental vaccine, yes.
I mean, when you told that to your family and to your friends, they might not have been too happy with it, I imagine.
My parents are by this point are kind of used to me doing wacky, crazy things. So, you know, I've trained them well.
But I can imagine that the people that love you were deeply concerned about it. Why are you putting yourself at risk like this?
Well, and this was back in 2006, and I just, you know, I learned the science, I learned the research, I got the facts and decided, yeah, I want to do this. If I've had the privilege of living this long as an HIV negative person, then the very, very least I could do to give back is to offer my body for an experimental vaccine. So that's what I did in 2006, and I was given an experimental vaccine, so I have antibodies to HIV today. And but the vaccine did not work, just like the one before it and the ones after it.
It didn't work in trials. Like you're still HIV negative,
right? I'm HIV negative, but the vaccine conferred no protection for anybody in these trials. There was zero efficacy
It seems like you as a person have always been attracted to putting yourself in harm's way or potentially harm's way for the betterment of humanity.
Thank you, Fausto. I love that. But, you know, from my point of view, I love hearing that. But I guess I don't really see it that way, because I really just believe in science. And I always take time to learn science before I would make any decision. Mm-hmm. To me, the potential risk factors of a vaccine were pretty low. At worst case scenario, it wasn't going to work. And it didn't work. And that's, you know, okay, I'm still here. I'm still HIV negative. When it came to PrEP, I was like, okay, I learned the science. And I started taking this drug. And I started taking loads up my ass with people who I knew were HIV positive, and some people's status I did not know, and was like, I think the science works. And it does. And it did. And it's, you know, it will when I'm back on my knees again someday. So I do trust science very, very much. And, you know, but I've taken the time to learn about science so I could trust it.
So in terms of like where we are right now, we're right now, at least in Chicago and New York, at the height of the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah.
We're taping this podcast when as far as we know, the number of deaths seems to escalate and increase exponentially every day.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't know what the outcome is going to be. And we have friends, and, you know, we open up those dating hookup apps, and you see they're filled with people who are like starving for intimacy or sex. And at the same time, you know, there's a lot of anxiety. What message, what idea can we put out there to bring some peace, some purpose and pleasure in this time, in this very delicate time period?
Well, in terms of the peaceful part, it kind of gets back to what you were saying earlier about what's happening with the Republicans and the Postal Service and all that. Because in my mind, at this moment today, all of that falls under the circle of things that Damon cannot control. I have no control over any of that shit. I mean, clearly anything I think or believe is totally irrelevant to some of the politics that are unfolding. But then I always come back to, what are the things I can control, or what are the things I get a say in? Well, the election's coming up. Now, I still don't understand a lot about how voting's going to work, but I am conferring and always looking to swingleft.org. And when it comes time to stand up and be active and go canvassing or knocking on doors or registering people to vote in swing states, I'm going to do that as much as I possibly can this summer and in the fall. And so that falls under the circle of things I can control, or things I have something
purpose
where I can have a say in the matter. And that is, for me, is that the distinguishing between those two is where peace comes from. Or, as many would say, this is the essence of the serenity prayer that people often hear. To know there are things in this world I can control, things I cannot control, and the wisdom to know the difference. And it changes every single day. But that's what I'm asking people to evaluate every single day. You know, especially now, I'm going to be honest with you. I always have a ritual of waking up and trying to get my brain in the right place, because I'm always grumpy when I wake up. But right now, it's so simple for me. When I wake up in the morning, I'm like, okay, am I breathing? Okay, I'm breathing. Okay. Okay. Do I have a fever? No, I don't have a fever. Is my head hurting? Is my chest hurting? Do I have any signs of COVID? Right now, I don't. That's all I got. Today, I don't have that. This morning, I don't have that. And that, to me, is the most grateful thing I can think, and the most grateful way I start the day. It's really simple. That's where my peace comes from right now.
And then in terms of pleasure, part of me is like, you know, I'm seeing a wide variety of behaviors here.
Mm-hmm.
And what I ask everybody out there is, I think Kate Bornstein is my favorite person. Just forgive yourself and forgive other people for whatever behavior you may choose to do, whether that is staying home and lighting up a crack pipe and watching Tiger King on repeat till you're, you know, drop dead or whatever, or, you know, whatever you choose to do is going to be okay. But, you know, part of it is like, It's so easy to be angry at someone like Aaron Schock, who is living this lavish lifestyle in a sunny, warm, tropical climate, surrounded by, you know, muscular, gorgeous men, plenty of money, plenty of sex, plenty of food, plenty of alcohol, not a care in the world. and bragging about it on social media to people who are very much isolated, who are getting a stimulus check of $1,200, and that's supposed to last them, according to Republicans, for a year.
Okay, so there's a lot there, but again, I would just say that we know that the need to look on the internet and criticize and attack and shame Aaron Schock or anybody else is a reaction to fear, and it's an understandable reaction to fear, but it's not a healthy reaction to fear, and it's not a productive action.
To be angry at a Republican who voted against equality and is now having the time of his life when most people are suffering?
Because what about that at this moment can you change versus the things you can't? And I'm not talking about politically. I'm talking about the realm of mental health right now. Because when we spend an inordinate amount of time or an unbalanced amount of time focusing on what we don't like about other people, instead of really doing the work within ourselves to be balanced, to be calibrated, to be centered, so that when we do go out in the world and we take action and we do act productively and we use our rage to protest and to vote and to take actions, then that is where peace comes from. That is where productivity comes from. But just spending your time gnashing your teeth, getting angry at people on the internet for living their lives, that is not productive. And by the way, I want to just tell you, sometimes I wish people had my job or could hear what the things I hear one day in my therapy office, or now it's not my therapy office anymore, it's my therapy screen, because the people on the internet who you see or projecting as living some sort of like highfalutin happy life that's full of luxury and joy and partying, so many of those men are so miserable and depressed and suffering. And You guys talk about body dysmorphia a lot, and you guys know that sometimes the images people put out in public are so different from what they're experiencing in private. And I hear that all the time in my job. And I know you guys hear that to some degree in the work you do and the interviews you do. So I never assume that those public images are accurately portraying what that person's life is actually like.
Well, I don't hear you guys talking about any pleasure up in here. So I'm going to tell you about Denmark, they're actually reopening some of their schools and their stores and whatnot. Because, you know, a lot of the Scandinavian countries went on early lockdown. And Denmark saw a 100% increase in the sale of sex toys as the lockdown came
down.
What
kind of sex toys?
Toys for sex.
But like dildos, Benoit balls, vibrators.
They didn't get that specific in the news article, sex toys or
pocket
anything that
you
use for sex. And so I think it's interesting. It's just like they went into lockdown, they got a bunch of sex toys, and guess what? They're reopening to their society because they did an early intervention.
Yeah.
And they just sat at home and stuck Benoit balls up there.
And you
we
know
can
what?
Do this.
And we're going to learn from that because, you know, this really is completely new. We don't know much about this virus. Just before we started this interview, I just saw a news story, apparently a credible news story, saying that this actually may have come from a laboratory. This wasn't an accident of evolution. Mm-hmm. This may have actually been developed in a laboratory in China.
And it became.
And I just started reading about
it
and seeing that.
Or it just escaped, or what happened?
So it obviously didn't, if it was developed in a lab or studied in a lab, it didn't go the way it was planned, because I don't think they're saying it wasn't. I just saw this on CNN on Chris Cuomo before talking to you guys, that Sanjay Gupta was saying it's not clear if it was intended to be biological warfare, but it does appear to be man-made. And that's why it's throwing so many people off. That's why there's so much confusion about how do you treat it? How do you prevent it? And why are some parts of the world functioning so much better with this than others? We don't know that yet. Mm-hmm. But places like Denmark might be examples of how people can learn what works well and how communities can cope with this in a way with a lot less harm than what we're seeing in areas that are very geographically dense, like New York City, like Chicago, Detroit, New Orleans.
And I understand Germany's doing quite well with it too, just because they have a lot of tests.
Yes.
Know? So they're doing a lot of tests. And, you know, Trump's saying that states should do it, and the states are saying it's the CDC's responsibility, and it's just kind of like, how can we get a sensible healthcare in this country? You know, in Canada, the provinces are in charge of the healthcare, and I wouldn't mind if Illinois was in charge of our healthcare here, but I just know that, you know, it's, you know, the southern states probably would just have the worst healthcare, and so everybody would just, like, move.
So that gets to my third point, the purpose part of my little trifecta there, the peace, the purpose, and the pleasure. The purpose is saying, okay, what can I do about this? Because really what it comes down to in this country is not what you and I think. It's the Electoral College and it's the 12 swing states and getting people who are registered Democrat today to actually show up to the polls and have their votes counted in November. How do we do that? Well, these questions are being talked about actively and being responded to actively at swingleft.org. And there's already so many things we can do from our living rooms in terms of getting people living in the swing state to vote. And again, the purpose of Swing Left is not to try to get in arguments or debates or scream at the right wing. It's not about that. It's about saying that the math shows us if everybody who's registered Democrat in these 12 swing states actually shows up to the polls and has their votes counted, we will have no trouble flipping the Senate, the House, and the presidency in November. And that is what we need in order to heal, not just politically, but emotionally and mentally from this extremely abusive, traumatic catastrophe of the last 4 years that we have all been living through.
So what you're saying is Susan Sarandon was right.
No, I don't. I do not subscribe to Susan Sarandon.
What did Susan Sarandon say?
Janet, she's like better off with Trump than we are with Hillary.
That's right. I was thinking Susan Powder.
Stop the insanity. That too.
No, I would agree with Susan Powder than Susan Sarandon these days.
So
I'll
get out there. Concentrate, figure out, find your purpose in life while you're self-quarantining, self-isolating, whatever you're doing, and get out there so that when we're free again, we can make that change that this country needs.
But for the love of God, leave your hair alone.
Now, don't shame people.
I've seen so many fashion crimes against our lovely hair follicles by my dearest and most lovely friends.
I have a middle-aged woman, mother of like three today, like posting on Facebook. She's like, well, I guess cutting my bangs wasn't the best idea. I was like, it's okay. You can just tell people you're 4 years old. And and then our good friend Tom Goss, like 2 weeks ago, he's just like, I'm going to bleach my hair blonde. And so he did a little shower cam. I thought it was pretty sexy, though, I have to say. But then he ends up shaving it all off because he didn't like the color.
He didn't use a toner. He's like using
He didn't even watch a YouTube video on how to do his hair.
It was like all kinds of cuckoo.
And every beauty expert out there is just like, you know what? Play with makeup, do what you want, but do not cut your hair. Don't play with your hair. So what's the impulse, Damon? That's what I want to get behind that. What is that thing that's making people go like, I have to do it? Because I have to say, at some point in time in my past, I've had that same kind of experience. And I have to say, I felt a little manic at that moment. How do we get people to like, you know, to rein that in?
Well, I guess the first thing I'd say is, why do we have to rein it in? People are going to express themselves the way they need to. And if, you know, if people are reacting to the lack of safety in this quarantine, in this difficult time, by expressing themselves with a certain kind of expression, maybe that's what they need to do.
I'm talking about people, and then they regret it afterwards, and then they're living with the shame of that awful haircut, the awful dye job, all that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, send them my way, because regret and shame and should are not the healthiest ways to get through life.
But you know, I know so many moms, I'm talking, you know, in their 50s, they're at home, isolated, they're like, I've always dreamed of shaving my head.
Well,
my
I'm about
Cindy,
to do that.
She shaved her head and then.
Does she like it?
No. She instantly was like, what did I just do?
That's the thing. How do we get people to
and then
know?
She posts a photo of it on social media. I said, you know what? Just put the phone down, put the electric shaver down, and take a nap. When in doubt,
buy a wig.
Nap it out. That's okay.
Get a wig.
It's okay just to, you know, the Zen Buddhism, this is what I always tell all the people I train and work with in my life. I say doing nothing is doing something.
That's right.
It's okay.
Absolutely.
Not
We're
to
human
do
beings,
anything.
Not human doings.
Damon, what is our icon, our favorite icon, Cher up to these days?
Cher is just going, as one would expect, is going, she's getting pretty antsy during this quarantine. And if you're following her Twitter feed, she is going off on the White House. And she just, I believe last week, called Trump a murderer. And I'm like, you go, Cher. You tell it the way it is. Speaking of hairstyles, speaking of expressing yourself with hair and wigs, she's doing it, but she's using social media and Twitter to express her political convictions, and more power to her. Again, she's someone I look up to.
And if Cher were cutting her own hair during the pandemic, we would never notice, because she'd just plop on one of her hundreds of wigs on top. So it'd be like, oh, okay.
Well, that's what Dolly Parton always says. You know, she's like, people say, how long does it take to do your hair? She's like, I don't know. I'm never there when it's being done.
Cher tweeted, the earth is breathing easier because we've stopped assaulting it. Look at the statistics. Earth has powers of regeneration and could give us, if we make changes, if we continue to do nothing, the earth will do what we do to an enemy, destroy it. Pandemic could be a second chance to save our earth.
And she has the right to say that any way she wants to, because she's Cher and she's been there for all of us throughout our entire lives.
Well, and some people are saying, hey, this is, you know, in some senses, this self-isolation, this working from home, this kind of stuff is, you know, maybe this will be part of the a whole new green world. Companies out there are discovering that, hey, we can be just as effective. You don't have to commute. You don't have to drive. You can telecommute and do your thing.
It is. And my concern with that is that if that's the trend it leads to, I think it could result in many people feeling more isolated and cut off and lonely than they would have otherwise if they had the routine of going into an office and being around other people. Now, I could be wrong about that. And I think introverts are in heaven right now. But for a lot of extroverts, this is really difficult not to be around other human energy. Mm-hmm. But if it makes companies more flexible and able to work with, help people be the most productive and feel good, then that's probably good. And I'll tell you the other thing that I'm really hopeful about when all is said and done,
yeah,
is that all of us who live through this and all of us who survive this are never, ever going to approach socializing and sexualizing and drinking and laughing and playing and dancing the same way again. We will never go back to doing these things the same way. We will always have a baseline of gratitude and appreciation for these normal activities that we haven't ever really had to have in our entire lives. And I think in some ways, for me, I think that means getting older and having experiences will be enhanced. There's going to be a greater depth of joy to it because we are being deprived from it during this difficult time. So I do look forward to that. I know I'm kind of an optimist, but I'm thinking again of kind of the Buddhist symbol of the yin yang and how we need to have the balance of one in order to fully appreciate the other. We often need suffering in order to experience joy.
So you're going to say it's going to be a days on end orgy as soon as this is over.
Oh, you know it. Days and weeks. You know the gay community is going to make up the time for this. We are. This is what we do. Whenever that time happens, we're definitely going to make up for it. And again, I really, really hope that when that happens, people savor it and enjoy it and appreciate it in a way that they may not have done before.
Mm.
You gotta taste all the fruit. You gotta drink all the wine. Don't leave a stone unturned. Don't leave a thing behind. But so this is the thing. I think it's very important to acknowledge the difficult scenario that we're in right now. And how many things are in peril. Mm-hmm. But there's a huge movement that really inspires me, making a distinction between positivity and optimism. There's people who are afraid of negative feelings and attach themselves to positivity at all costs. And, and optimism is different. It is like saying these are difficult times and we don't know if we're going to get out of them. But what I'd like everyone to do is to look for the light wherever it may be at the end of the tunnel that we're in. As Mr. Rogers said, look for the helpers.
I agree with you. And that's reflected in both the books I wrote, which is that I'm not a positive thinker. I don't want to get that twisted. I do not call myself a positive thinker. You're I am really not on that the happiness train. I think I'm a rational thinker. And I think I can see and use really, really constructive, enlightened philosophies to help guide me, to help understand how to feel and to respect the role of pain as the human experience we're here to have, which I think is a lot of what Buddhism and rational based philosophies do. But I am not a positive thinker. I am a rational thinker. And what I mean by that is that I know from my life, and I know from living 48, nearly 49 years in this life, is that everything I've been through that has knocked me down and everything I've been through that has sent me on the floor crying, thinking I can't get back up, has led me to be stronger, more resilient, smarter, more compassionate, and more loving. And right now, I feel so grateful for so many horrible things that have happened to me, because even though COVID is fucking scary, I have never felt more emotionally or professionally equipped to handle this and to be hopefully a helper of energy and trauma during this very, very difficult time. I've never felt more prepared for that before because I have been through some horrible shit. And so I'm grateful. I'm grateful for all the painful things I've been through. I'm grateful for all the joyful things I've been through, but I'm not really that preoccupied with happiness. I think happiness, there's a lot of pressure to the happiness thing. My goal is joy. Joy means I can feel good, and it doesn't mean I'm always happy. Sometimes I feel fucking lousy, but I still am aware of joy and gratitude in my life. And especially these days, that is where I am constantly nourishing and focusing my energy.
Word.
Damon, thank you so much for sharing my birthday and lifting our spirits today.
Happy birthday, beautiful. You're still so, you're always chicken to me. You're always younger than me.
You'll always be chicken to me. You may be a vegan because you can't afford to buy meat. You're clucking around in the all by yourself in your backyard because there's no one else to tweet. You'll always be a chicken to me. I just made up that song. But
can I do one exercise with you really quick before we go?
Exercise? Yeah. I haven't been to the gym in 2 months.
Well, here's a good one. Answer with me just right now. If you say yes or no, honestly, right now, are you feeling safe at this moment?
Yes.
No. But I mean safe enough.
Safe at it's this relative. Moment, meaning you are not in imminent threat of being destroyed at this minute. No one is hurting you or there's no virus trying to... You feel like
not that I know of
at this moment. Okay. At this moment,
yeah,
is what I'm saying.
As far as I know,
do you feel healthy in this moment?
Yes,
pretty well. Not yeah. Okay.
Do you feel loved in this moment?
Yes.
No.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Yes. Yes.
You better.
I'm sorry.
And at this moment, do you have enough? Do you have enough water to drink? Do you have enough food to eat? Do you have enough toilet paper in your bathroom?
I ran out of
Do you have
cookies.
Enough today? Do you have enough cookies today?
I ran out of. I ran out of edibles.
We have 3 rolls of toilet paper.
Okay, today there's enough toilet paper.
Yes,
I don't have any edibles.
Okay, but you have enough to survive for tomorrow.
Yes.
Okay, so say it with me if you don't mind. At this moment, I am safe.
At this moment, I'm safe.
At this moment, I am safe.
At this moment, I feel healthy.
At this moment, I feel healthy.
At this moment, I feel healthy.
At this moment, I am loved.
At this moment, I am loved.
At this moment, I have enough.
At this moment, I have enough.
Okay, how does that feel to you?
Oh, it feels pretty good.
Will we be tested on this?
No, but this is what I'm asking. Again, if these words resonate for people, this is what I'm asking my friends, my clients, my family to do. Just to kind of repeat and breathe if they meditate, to focus on what feels right now. At this moment, I am safe. At this moment, I am healthy. I am loved. At this moment, I have enough. None of us know what's going to happen tomorrow. And that's really one of the cruel lessons of this whole virus. But today is today. And if we can say those words today with meaning and authenticity, that's pretty good. So let's try to use these words and the power of our thought and our energies, maybe not to feel happy, but to feel peaceful and to see if there's a path toward gratitude today. Let's find that path together.
Damon, thank you so much.
I love you guys.
Love you too. Damon, where can people find you on the internets?
So Damon L. Jacobs, don't forget the L, DamonLJacobs.com. If you're on Facebook, please come visit the Prep Facts group. I'm on there pretty much all the time. Prep Facts, Rethinking HIV Prevention and Sex. And one of those places you'll find me, or just Google Truvada Whore Damon Jacobs and you'll find all my information there. Whether I want it there or not, you'll find it.
Well, stay safe in New York City and enjoy that pizza.
All right, gentlemen. Happy birthday, Fausto.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Damon L. Jacobs lives in New York City. It's Damon, DamonL Jacobs.com.
It was fun to reconnect with him. He's always, I love him because he really gets to change my thinking about these shoulds. That book, Should List, I think was very informative. Because I think growing up, you get these ideas in your head that these things have to be this way. It must be this way. You know, it's tradition or whatever. And then you read it and you're like, well, why does it have to be that way? And it can really just change your outlook and on life.
My mother has been saying that since we were kids.
Yeah.
And it drove us up the wall. Because part of it is like, is it telling people not to use should, a should thing? You know, you shouldn't use should. Mm-hmm. And we're like, that's the ultimate, you know, and in hindsight, I understand what she was trying to get us to do and think.
And it was fun to talk to him about harm reduction and sex in the time of COVID. And I'm glad we could be playful and have fun with it. And, you know, you have to make these choices for yourself. And I'm not recommending, you know, chances are you should be abstinent. Well, see, I use the word should.
We would like for you to make this choice.
Make an informed choice.
We cannot control what you're going to do. Yeah. And we consider you a friend. And if you make decisions that we don't necessarily like, does that mean we stop being friends?
Well, some decisions. That's for sure.
But,
like,
you know,
don't support this podcast, which you can do at feastoffun.com/plus or join us at Patreon at patreon.com/feastoffun.
Make my birthday a happy one, honey.
Make a donation in honor of Fausto's birthday. He puts his heart and soul into this show for the past 15 years. We're on our 16th season, and you can do that at feastoffun.com/donate.
I'm just really delighted and very proud of all the amazing people that we have midwifed to some degree, who are creating their amazing content now in the age of the coronavirus pandemic. And especially my wonderful husband and co-host, Mark Felian, who is really shining in these kind of difficult times.
Do you think?
I think so. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's hard. It's like, you know, I'm currently not working, but and you're doing some work from home. But I'm working more
than ever. I'm like I'm exhausted.
And it's just like, you know, but it's always like it's one thing after another. The furnace just broke in the house, so we can try and get that repaired. It's going to be a hefty bill. So if you thought about donating to Feast of Fun right now, would be a great time to do it.
We literally have a space heater. It's so sad.
But you know, we're lucky though because like spring is coming. We did get snow today, so it's not been super cold. Yes, it will get cold again.
It does remind me of those like cartoons where they're shivering in their homes because they can't afford a heater. And I'm like, oh my God. Yeah, the space heater broke earlier this week and it's been...
No, the furnace broke.
The furnace. Yeah, to the whole home. So it's like we're sleeping underneath lots of blankets.
Which can be cozy and romantic.
But. And I'm like, Jesse, the dog, I was like, don't you want to sleep with us? He's like, no. He's delighted. He loves it. He, you know, the one person that really sees no difference and is in fact very happy is our dog, Jesse. He's like, he's surrounded by the people he loves. He's, you know, the temperature is a lot cooler than he likes it that way because he's a big fluffy dog. And he gets to,
It warm though too, but he's also like, he's giving me the eye. He's like, are you guys ever going to leave the house again? Cause you know, he's attached to us, but there's times like when I would get stuff together and like, you know, go to the gym or I'd go to work, he would get the idea like, oh, you're leaving. I'm just going to settle in. He's not one of those dogs like you're leaving me. But now he's just kind of like, I'm here all the time.
He's so sweet. Yeah. How should we celebrate my birthday?
Well, let's have some, I'm going to make you a cake.
Oh, how exciting. You know, my favorite cake is this. I just discovered this cake just a couple years ago. It's a Puerto Rican, some parts of Puerto Rico love this stuff. And other parts have no idea what it is. And it's called a flancocho. Flan, everybody knows flan is custard.
Yeah.
And bizcocho is cake. So combined, it's flancocho. And I always thought it was some Spanish dessert or something. And then I found out that it's actually a Thai recipe.
Oh.
That I guess, you know, it's this weird aspect of Latinx culture.
It's the coconut connection.
The coconut connection that intersects with Asian culture.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think it's one of the most delicious things I've ever eaten in my life. I've only had it twice. We're going to try to make it a flancocho. And I want Mark and to post the recipe on our Groupon, our Patreon. Patreon.com/feastoffun. It really, and we want to see you guys make it. We want to know if it works for you. It's basically you're making a custard on the bottom, and then you're making a very fluffy cake
on top,
and it's baked together.
Well, we could do a layer of meringue on top of that cake too, so it could be like that Norwegian world's best cake.
Nah.
And so it'd be a flan cake, and then you do the meringue on top.
I'm not
and
a
then,
fan of it.
And then you stack it.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the stacking of that.
No.
And the problem with it is because the custard, if you stack that on top of each other, the whole thing falls apart.
Well, isn't that part of the fun? Is that what's happening to the whole world right now?
I could like to control one thing. It'd be have a cake that doesn't look
We'll see if I'll make that. I'm not sold on it yet. We'll see. But maybe for
thanks a lot.
Maybe for your birthday.
I would appreciate that.
You know. So I hope everybody can go to Fausto's Facebook and or to the website and wish him a happy birthday.
That'd be so nice.
It's important at these times of isolation that you really just, you know, feel the love and show the love for other people.
I appreciate that. Thank you guys so much for listening and indulging us in our whimsadaisical feast of fun. Mm-hmm. I'm Fausto Fernos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.